Big show for you here today. It is the week 15 edition of the Fantasy Film Room. Nate Tice joins me to talk through some offenses that aren't good, some teams that are bad, but we've got some diamonds in the rough players for you to check out and consider for your fantasy football playoff matchups. Harold Fannin, Devin Neal, Wandale Robinson, Mike Gesicki. Definitely keep your eye out on those players. Then we preview Thursday night football before we say goodbye to Nate Tice and bring in Joel Smith for this week's edition of Buzz is Building. Matchups to exploit this week. We're breaking it all down. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And join me to do just that is Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Great to see you. Also nice to actually hear you after producer Colin was, seems like he is broadcasting live from Times Square right now. That's what it sounds like when he chimes in. But no, great to see you, dude. I'm very excited to talk some ball about some teams that we touch on here and there. Very excited to talk about them here with you on this show.
No, I'm excited about today's topic in the Fantasy Film Room today as well, because Nate and I, obviously, if you are unfamiliar, we do Football 301 together earlier in the week. And at this point on the Real Deal NFL shows, we're talking about the good teams. We're talking about the playoff contenders. Like every single week, it's the producers want us to dissect exactly how these teams are going to be good in the games that matter, the postseason games, the playoff race here at the end of the regular season. That's typically the topic du jour. However, here in the fantasy football world, the whole pool is available to us. Yes. Nobody is irrelevant. Even the sloppiest, most grossest, disgusting, nastiest teams, we still got to talk about them. We got to consider them because there are fantasy players at all levels, from the established stars all the way down to potential sleepers for your postseason run. So usually, Nate and I, we're not always good about this, but we try not to overlap our topics between what we talk about on 301 and what we talk about the film room, and try not to say the phrase, as we talked about the other day, which we constantly fail at doing because we're talking about football together an awful lot, so it's going to happen. But my pitch for today's episode was, yeah, let's talk about some potential diamonds in the roughs, maybe some useful players on these bad offenses, because those are not the ones we're talking about on 301. So with that, let's dive into this topic. Let's dive into this week's Fantasy Film Room. All right, welcome to the Fantasy Film Room, presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season with another year of Toyota game day giveaways, from NFL Shop Gear to even Brock Purdy's favorite Sequoia. Toyota's giving fans a chance to win big. Visit toyota.com/NFL to learn more. So as I mentioned today, we're trying to identify some sleepers, diamonds in the rough, whatever you want to call it, for some of these teams that are bad. They're not going anywhere, but maybe these are guys we should still care about towards the stretch run here, Nate, especially as people are in their fantasy postseason. Like, how do you allocate your time at this point of the year between focusing on these good playoff teams and the matchups that might matter versus like, hey, let me check in on some of these outfits here?
It's just whatever the way the wind blows that day or week. I try to be disciplined in watching a lot of the relevant teams that we'll be previewing on Football 301 for the preview shows. But I always kind of, you know, have a little nosh with some of the bad teams. It's kind of one of my pet favorites, is to watch the bad teams and kind of just in case they become good. And then you know who the slot receivers are for the Jaguars for years and years and years. And you know who like the right guard is for certain teams. But that's really just kind of how I balance it. But even fantasy wise too, it's like, well, that's what's fun about fantasy, is all these games are relevant, and gambling as well. But that these teams are just relevant to what you, and players too. And actually some of the players I want to talk about today are maybe even dynasty ads. So just to add a little more conversation to it as well. I mean, do you want me to start off with the first team? But like that, this is like a great example of that, that even when teams are losing, teams are like, games are still being played. Stuff is still happening.
Yeah.
And that's what's fun, that it still matters. And I know in fantasy, but just in real football as well. But that's what's fun, is that there, all this kind of ties together, even in the worst of the worst games that happened in the NFL at the tail end of the season. There's still stuff that's happening. There's guys getting reps. There's guys getting more focus. That might be a little snapshot of right now, but also a snapshot of what they could become in the future, which is always fun to check out too in real time to also save yourself some work in the offseason. That's another aspect of this as well.
That is exactly right. And I know that's what you've been doing with all your Cam Ward analysis lately. I can tell you're trying to save yourself some time in the offseason. So when those debates come up, you've already got the ammunition. You've already got that ready to go. I will just use that to say before we jump into our teams here today, there were three teams I just kind of eliminated from contention here, and you didn't bring any of these players from these three teams up as well. So I think that makes sense.
Obvious.
There's three,
no-goes, these teams.
Three no-goes here, especially for this week. Raiders, we're not talking about any diamonds in the rough there. Teams that just can't do it this week, mostly because, like, Kenny Pickett might start, which I actually don't know how much worse. This is how bad things are. How much worse is Kenny Pickett than like a broken Geno Smith at this point with all the injuries he's got to his throwing? Probably worse, but still, we are unlikely to get Geno Smith this week. So Kenny Pickett and his revenge game against the Eagles, we're going to eliminate them. As I've said, the Tennessee Titans, I mean, Tony Pollard dunked on me last week, but there's just nothing to talk about there from a fantasy standpoint. There will be, again, offseason wars about Cam Ward, and hopefully can we get him a real wide receiver, but we'll deal with that in February and beyond. And then the Jets, Tyrod Taylor and Justin Fields didn't practice today. And if it's Brady Cook under center, like, I'd love to care about Adonai Mitchell, but I mean, I actually did not realize Brady Cook was Luther Burden's quarterback from last year. I was like, oh, I've been watching some Brady Cook a lot in my life. And
I swear he was good but like maybe like a fourth roundish grade as a junior, and then just had a bad senior year. And it's kind of continued. It kind of looks like I was actually shocked he was still on a roster. I thought he'd just be a camp arm. So I wasn't really expecting to see a full week of practice ever for Brady Cook anytime in his NFL career. So here we go. Isn't Breece Hall injured as well?
Breece Hall is injured as well. So yeah, we can go ahead and wipe the Jets off the board. Unless you're the desperate sixth seed, you don't need to be adding Isaiah Davis to start for your fantasy football team in week 15 here. Okay, so those are the ones off the board. Now let's get into some teams here that we might be able to define some potential diamonds in the rough. This first section, these are potential value players from just the dregs of the league. And let's start with the Cleveland Browns here. Nate, I know there's one player in particular you think is definitely worth highlighting.
Yeah, I don't think I'm breaking any new news with this guy, but you guys informed me, or the producers informed me, that he's actually only rostered in about half of the Yahoo rosters right now. But that's Harold Fannin from the Cleveland Browns, who is just a phenom. I mean, real football sense and fantasy football sense. I think this is going to be a really good tight end class, which kind of figured anyways with this rookie class. That's how it kind of graded out as prospects as well. I don't include Mason Taylor, too. He's actually looking okay long term for the Jets. So that's one Jets discussion, one Jets sentence I got in there. But Harold Fannin, man, is just a bull with the ball in his hands. He is just very good as a yak player. And this offense has been running a lot of screens, and they've been productive on screens because of Harold Fannin, because he is just able to take underneath throws, checkdowns, and other plays. So some tight ends might just get 4 or 5 yards, and he can turn to first downs, which means more plays. And they find ways. There's not a lot going on with the Browns. Just in a real football sense. Judy's Judy. They're kind of just trying to find weapons, but Fannin has shown that it's not just a desperation of this team. It's like, oh no, this guy's a building block going forward. And I know just even narratively off the field is that the coaches love him and that they want to feature him long term. You know, so he is a guy I think is obviously startable, but even if you're just needed, I've actually like a decision. It's like I have him on some teams where I maybe have a better tight end. I think he's ranked pretty high this week anyways. But I'm just, maybe he's just the splash play that I'm hoping that I get a big spike week, because I think spike weeks out of him are realistic, not just the rest of this year, but just long term as well. Like, he's going to be at worst a top three option in any type of good offense. And this is a bad offense, and he looks like the number one option, to be frank. But I'm a big believer in him. Charles McDonald, our Football 301 third, has been pounding the drum about him. He was super productive in college. It's very real. I think maybe that's the long or the short of it that I want to say about Harold Fannin. It's very real. He's a good player, and I think the production will stick this way going forward.
Yeah, good matchups down the stretch, especially this week against the Bears. I think there will be spots for him for sure. I talked about this, I think it was with Boone, because he comes up every week in the waiver wire. For whatever reason, people are not adding him. And like, he's not been a consistent guy you can start every single week necessarily, but he's really coming on late. And regardless, I think I brought this up with Boone, that he's having one of the best tight end rookie seasons in fantasy ever. I remember Charles often player comparison for Harold Fannin was Aaron Hernandez on the field, as he would always say, of course. And actually from a points per game perspective in fantasy, like, their rookie seasons are very close. So it was a great comparison by Charles, and it's definitely worked out well. I mean, he's just dusted David Njoku for the top tight end role here. Like, I thought Fannin might be kind of what he was at the beginning of the year, where he's a bit player, he's in and out a little bit in 12 personnel. But no, here towards the end of the season, you look at like route participation. I know Njoku got hurt in this past week's game, but just since week 12, he's run a route on 87% of the dropbacks, which is second only to Jerry Jeudy at 92%, and David Njoku is at like 24%. None of the receivers are higher than 66%. I've definitely been bummed that Cedric Tillman's done pretty much nothing ever since he got back from injury. Started off the year well, but I just think he's a guy that like can't really consistently stay on the field, and you can't really count on him at this point. So regardless, at this state with the Browns offense, you're not really looking to get the ball but to two guys, and Harold Fannin is the one, like, per route, easily the most productive. 22 targets since week 12. I think he is an incredibly fun player to watch. Physical, finds space well, useful after the catch too. Like, he is just, he's been the most impressive, like, player in their offense from the passing game perspective by a significant margin. I'm really excited about him down the stretch, and certainly in Dynasty, like, I wish I had more of Harold Fannin.
I do too. I had some decisions. I have him in a couple, but I'm like one of those where it's like I had opportunities to take him in every one, and I'm like kind of kicking myself. It's like, did I really need Devin Neal? Maybe. Spoilers. But no, with Fannin is that also is the quarterback, obviously, Shedeur Sanders is getting a lot of the headlines, but because of how Shedeur plays, you know, he's still a developmental guy, and what developmental guys typically throw underneath. They throw to their running backs and they throw to their tight ends. And Fannin is turning those, again, like, into actually positive gains. So that's just something, too. It's like, that's the classic line. The tight end is the quarterback's best friend, especially young quarterbacks, because what happens is when they get pressured, or they come off their first read and not like panicking or not panicking, their eyes come down, and the routes that are usually down are the tight end and the running back. So it's just even if it's not a great offense, like the offensive ecosystem, which we usually use in like a whole general sense, just like the synergy and just this playing with a rookie quarterback is going to work, I think, for Fannin as well, too. That's why I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. I wanted to talk about him because I personally have decisions to make, but I also think he's just a really fun player. Colson Loveland's a great player. Tyler Warren's a good player. Like, now you got Fannin as well. Like, these guys are all very real in my estimation.
Yeah, the way this Browns offense looked in week 14, obviously it was like the best production game for Shedeur so far, but you know, Harold Fannin really involved 11 targets in this game. You mentioned the underneath stuff, 6.7 air yards per target. I like that they kind of got Dylan Sampson involved as a passing game back. Dylan Sampson's not like somebody you can consider in fantasy, but I actually kind of think like long term, Judkins has been good, and Judkins, it's the efficiency stuff's fallen off as of late, but you were saying this, you were on record saying this, I think, since the draft, that offensive line is a ticking time bomb. And guess what? The bomb's gone off at this point. Like, age has taken in, injuries have taken in. And so Judkins' efficiency stuff's going to come down a little bit. But Sampson getting involved for 5 for 64, I think, was nice to see. What do you think about Shedeur, though? Like, just before we move off the Browns, because I don't think we need to say too much more about, like, Harold Fannin. We think he's a potential fantasy starter this week and going forward. What do you, like, Give me kind of an approximation, like a grade of what you would say of Shedeur Sanders so far, like what you've seen from him.
It's just that he doesn't do much. You know, they run so many screens and they run so many bootlegs and everything. And I think when they have to drop back, he's just a beat slow with some stuff that he's not comfortable with, which is kind of what my grade of him anyways in college is. I knew kind of he'd be behind the eight ball a little bit with learning like an NFL offense. It was kind of simplistic at Colorado. They ran drop back stuff, but it was kind of half field reads, which meaning is that one coverage, if it's single high, you look this way. If it's too high, you look that way. Not to say that teams don't do that in the NFL. The Eagles do that right now. Cowboys do that. Dak Prescott likes some of those reads. Quarterbacks have, you know, kind of just sprinkle them in. But getting off of that and running like real other concepts, you know, because that's about 80% of your diet. That's where you can see it very up and down. I think even the Judy touchdown that he had last week, he's going coast to coast on that play. And I don't even think he's going to the right spot technically, but he gets there. And so that's just one of those things where it's like a good result, but the process could be cleaner. And then again, it's a rookie day three guy. And I just think too, it's just so hard to talk about him fairly with all the hoopla, good or bad. So just in my estimation, it just looks like a day three rookie that they're trying to keep on the guard, the very big bumpers, very big guardrails. And when he has to drop back, it's up and down. His arm's not bad. He's not a great athlete. He holds onto the ball too much and he drifts backwards, but it's like you hopefully some reps and, you know, actually like helps that out. But that's all you can really say right now. It's projecty, I think, is the short way to put it.
You know what he looks like to me is what we discussed him as a prospect on 301, which was he's not a round one guy, but he's not where he went in the NFL draft. Like, he doesn't look like a fifth round pick out there. He's obviously better than Dylan Gabriel. We knew, yeah, like we
Dylan
said,
Gabriel
that. We said
got that overdrafted and Shedeur Sanders got underdrafted. That was the
exactly
best way to kind of look at it. Yeah.
Correct, which I think there's a lot of things, but that's part of like what broke people's brains about the Shedeur Sanders discussion. And there's been a lot of broken brains all throughout. But I mean, just the fact like, well, Dylan Gabriel's not as good, but he got reps. It's like, well, yeah, he got the reps because he got drafted higher and that was stupid. But we all knew it was stupid. Like it just is what it is. And Gabriel failed at his job. And now Shedeur is, I think, playing better. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's at least playing himself into, I'm not going to say the conversation of being the Browns 2026 starter, but you never know. Like, this Browns team is in a really weird spot. He's certainly not embarrassing himself out there, and he's doing just enough to make the truthers excited by the highs, and the people who like hate him, they'll have plenty to point to, be like, yeah, see, this stinks secretly. Or
that's
whatever.
Why it's so, like, yeah, I don't even want to dive into it until after the season that I could just watch a bunch of games where it's not just insane. Because to me, it's like I was not very high on Dylan Gabriel. Like, I thought he was a late day three guy, and that's what he looked like to me. Smart, and I get that, but that's where traits come in. And at least with Shedeur, I don't think he's an overwhelming runner and an overwhelming size or anything, but at least he pushes the ball. Like, at least he throws the ball downfield. And so, like, those types of guys, I'm like, all right, that gives you some shots to make plays like in against the Raiders, you know, where he comes off script and does it to Judy as well. It's just working in structure he has to work on. But again, this team's got nothing going for him right now. They have so many questions to answer that it's like, might as well just try out all these rookies. Fannin, Shedeur, Judkins, and even on defense, Schwesinger is incredible. Like, he's probably going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. So it's like, it was a good draft class. It's just that the quarterback discussion is grabbed all the headlines, good and bad, which I get. But really, it was all the other rookies on the Browns are more interesting to me than I think that, you know, obviously that what the headlines get.
Here's the reality. If it's Dylan Gabriel playing right now and he was playing the way he was, we're not leading off the show with like, hey, Harold Fannin is a really good play for your fantasy playoffs. So that exactly. is like a that. That alone is a feather in Shedeur Sanders' cap. Let's move on to the next team here. This is the Saints offense, and there's actually a couple rookies to highlight here. I know you want to talk about Devin Neal. I do as well. And I talked about it with Ray Garvin yesterday and kind of been bringing it up on the show recently. Like, Tyler Shuck playing some pretty good football lately and actually unveiling a lot of interesting stuff. Like, he was keeping it on the read plays last week, and the Bucs were not ready for that at all. But talk to me about Devin Neal, who I know is a prospect that you liked, and he's been getting some burn here lately.
Yeah, this is exactly what I was kind of hoping. Also, Audric Estime making a cameo, which was just like, oh yeah, you you were interesting a couple years ago. A year ago, really.
The reverse Saints Broncos incestuous relationship. Usually it's unbelievable. Former Saints going to Denver, now the former Broncos going to the Saints.
There I saw Devon Vele catch a pass against the Bucks. Actually, it was a nice play.
That's right.
That's the one I was like, you guys, this is ridiculous. No, Neal is just I've kind of my comparison for him, just to give like a snapshot, is maybe like a Diet Coke David Montgomery. That's kind of my way to compare him, where he's just kind of good at everything or above average at everything. He's not going to be an explosive back, but he can hit doubles. Like, he's not a slug. And I think he's one of those backs that he has a running style that I always kind of like, where he can be square to the line. He's good in any type of system. He's good downhill. Like, his running style is better maybe for the NFL than college, even though he was super productive in college at Kansas, where it's more just like in between the tackles and kind of just how Kyle Manungai has kind of been. He's more physical than Neal, but Neal's kind of just got that little shiftiness. He's kind of in the, yeah, he's on the Montgomery, Devin Singletary archetype. He's somewhere on there where I like him more than Singletary did when he was coming out of college, actually. But good in pass protection since day one. Since he's been healthy, they trust him out there on third down, which I actually think is makes him really interesting long term, that he at the very least can be, who knows what happens with Kamara, but he can at the very least be like a very good two that can take over the backfield, depending on how it shakes out long term. Kind of like a Chase Brown, where he kind of like steals the backfield kind of thing as it kind of has worked out. But I just think he and watching him last week against the Bucs, which has a good run defense. I have a stat about that later, is that I do think that it's just he is a steady, good, solid runner. And this young Saints offensive line is actually not bad. And so I think that he can be productive. And if Chuck can be just – and Chuck is just non-offensive as a quarterback. He is like that, and which is a win for a day two rookie. It's just, oh, okay, you get it done. And then the rushing ability is nice. So I'm just saying that the game script, and they're not just going to be like down 30 – like the Titans are sometimes, where it's just like, this is actually a productive system, even if it's not all perfect and it's very young right now.
Totally. Yeah. And we showed that stat on the screen just now from Jeff Bell, where that it's like there's been nothing going on from a Alvin Kamara perspective. Hit 60 scrimmage yards from scrimmage in just 4 of 11 games, and Devin Neal's done it in 3 straight games. And some of that is just process of elimination. Like, he's pretty much the only back left other than Andrick Estime, but he's actually been good. Like 2.68 yards after contact per rush in last week's game. He was, in terms of running backs, like share of percentage of team touches, he was 10th in the NFL. So he owned 80% of the backfield touches there in New Orleans. And again, some of that is process of elimination. He is just consolidating the work there. But I couldn't agree more with your assessment of him as just kind of a teach tape back. Like, shoulders square to the line of scrimmage. He's just very, very fundamentally sound. He'll make a great running back coach one day, Devin Neal, if that's what he wants to do, because he's so fundamentally sound as a runner. And for this team right now that just kind of needs to stay on schedule with some of the general chaos of that offense, I think that he's a perfect fit there. So these next 3 games for him are really nice, man. So in the fantasy postseason, if Devin Neal is on your roster, he's definitely someone to consider. Panthers, Jets, Titans. This week against the Panthers might be his most difficult matchup, I think, from a run defense perspective. And it's plenty fine enough to start a running back against the Panthers. I will just say, from like a ranking standpoint, you can't get crazy high on Neal just because of the offensive environment. Like, how many points is his team going to be projected to score? But I think he's in consideration with, the Kenneth Walker. Like, is Kenneth Walker a better fantasy play than Devin Neal right now? I mean, Kenneth Walker, you can't reliably say to get like all the touches in his backfield.
Right. And that's the thing, is his skill set is one of these that you can find the cheapies at. And this is like the tight end discussion, is like the tight ends that can block a running back like this Neal, who's solid. Again, I'm not saying overwhelming, but solid, like where it's like the coaches are like, yeah, he can do it, as opposed to like, well, he can't do this. Solid as a screen runner, solid as a check down guy and a receiver who can make one guy miss, kind of get some easy yards. I have to emphasize this, good in protection, that as soon as he got healthy, they're like, you are our third down back. That is very interesting to me when a day 3 back, and the coaches are like, no, we want him. There's actually a few rookies that have been this year. Like, shout out to this rookie class, by the way. But it's just that he's out there and they trust him. But that also means, when you get a smart coaching staff like this, tendencies. All right, he's on the field for this pass route. Okay, here comes the screen off of that. And so you kind of get some of those, like a red zone screen that can turn into a touchdown, just more opportunities available. Just like the blocking tight end discussion that we've had over the last couple of years. It's like, just because you're on the field, you end up getting these cheap things. I shouldn't say cheap, but just more opportunities to get a touchdown, to get a big play, to get a shot play, just to get more stuff. So I don't know. I liked him as a player, and I just was like, this is kind of like exactly how I envisioned him laying out, especially with Kamara. He's been a better pass protector than Kamara this year, and I have no qualms with saying that. So that's, I don't know. I'm kind of encouraged what I've seen so far. It's not the sexiest back, but he's a good, solid running back.
I'll ask you sort of the same question about Tyler Shuck that I did with Shedeur Sanders. Just like, I know you said he's been non-offensive. Like, what is he brought to the, cause I have my thoughts, but so I want to, but I want to hear yours. What do you think he's brought to the offense versus like what we were getting with Spencer Rattler? Cause I do think the flavors are a little bit different.
Actually, he's just been, Rattler's been, they use Rattler as a design runner a little bit more than I thought, because he was always kind of just an okay athlete. But seeing Shuck's got a little bit more juice. I mean, those just as a runner, like I know. And he ran a 4.6 and change. Like, I'm not totally shocked. It was just that he had a play style that was a little bit safer in college, where I always talk out both sides of my mouth with it. It's kind of like good coaching tape where it's like, hey, don't put the ball in harm's way. Just get rid of it. Don't take a sack. But sometimes you're like, well, you got to try a little bit more. You know, you got to push it a little bit when you're under duress, especially in the NFL. I actually think, though, this offense, it's actually worked okay for him, where he's just putting the ball in play. Like, he's just not making a lot of mistakes. He's got a good enough arm to make any throw. Like, his high throws in college at Louisville the last year, which, again, he's older. He's 26. He's older than Trevor Lawrence. Like, I got to emphasize this. He's older than Trevor Lawrence. So that's the other thing. Long term, I don't know. But this is kind of what I envisioned, even as I had him graded as basically in the big chunk. Him, Dart, Shedeur, Riley Leonard. I had all those guys graded in this big, like, third round chunk. And with him, it was like, well, I think there's a floor here, which we're seeing, because he's a good processor. And I think he's got pretty good arm, and he's also a pretty good athlete. It's just sometimes, you know, he's just maybe a step slow with some stuff. Maybe just sometimes just kind of have some sprays and misses. Like, his high end stuff maybe is not consistently there. But I don't know. I think you can. He's a quarterback that's like interesting to look at right now. Like, again, non-offense is how I go, but it's been positive so far. I haven't been overwhelmed where, like, some maybe my compatriots in the national media where they're saying like, oh my God, like, this guy's going to win MVP one day. I'm not saying it's like that, but it's been just kind of like, oh, this guy's been a solid rookie. You know, this guy's just been pretty solid as a starter. But that, I don't know what his ceiling is long term. But for what this is right now, okay, we can get through 2025. Makes 2026 draft a little interesting, but then the 2027 draft might be where they look elsewhere.
Yeah, I think that just for
I got
me
a lot of thoughts on it, Matt. I've been trying to figure out how I feel. I grade him anyway, so that's why. Thank you for letting me talk about him, because
I'm glad to hear that, because I have been thinking about this too, and it's like Sanders. It's just such a more hot topic to talk about. Nobody cares about what your feelings are about Tyler Shuck, but everybody cares what you should or should not say about Shedeur Sanders. But I actually kind of feel like for both of these guys, they've made their offenses better since they got in. I do think that the offense was fine with Spencer Rattler. I think actually the stat that we're showing here, like completion percentage in the intermediate area of the field, that is actually where I think that Shuck has taken a little bit of a step ahead of Rattler, is just in that kind of 10 to 19 yard area.
It's a great observation. A little bit more willing to
He's more willing to just push it, I think, than Rattler. Almost was trying to almost overcompensate for maybe his over aggressive styles in college, where he was really taking those like quick out routes, the now routes and stuff like that to Chris Olave. And then with Shuck, it's been a little bit he's got his hair down a little bit more, which I think has been fun to watch. And I think Sanders has definitely been better than Gabriel in that way. Whereas both of these guys, like, I think from a 2026 perspective, if this team just decides, hey, like, I think they've seen enough to be like, if we go into the season with, not saying like this guy's our future, he's our answer, let's tie ourselves to him forever, but we could probably get away with him being the week one starter in 2026. And like, there are worse outcomes than that, is kind of how I feel about both of these guys. And they certainly make me more interested in the ancillary players in the offense for fantasy. Like, him and Olave had that one miscommunication on the go route that Olave, Shuck thought it was a go.
It was like a read route.
Olave snapped it off. Yeah, it's a read route. And like, I was glad to see like Shuck didn't throw him under the bus or anything like that. Like, that's just good. They're building
up. He seems
up
like a great dude. Which, yeah, no, I by all accounts, he seems like a good dude, a hard worker and all that stuff too. The, you know who made the tackle after that interception? Devin Neal.
No.
Nice open field tackle on
there
that play.
There we go.
Yes, he did.
A grinder.
Yeah, a good football
grinder,
player. Good
absolutely.
Football player right there. No, Shuck, this situation reminds me a little bit, and also because I got to understand too, the Browns and what's the talking points for the Browns and having to find a quarterback in the future. Well, the Saints don't have that national spotlight on them like that. The Saints kind of do whatever the hell they want. And so I think a little bit, this kind of reminds me in a way, not saying this is exactly how it's going to play out, but like with Ritter, when he was like, oh, okay, let's give this guy a shot. Yeah, we'll just see. We like if we don't love anyone in the draft, we'll just give this day two guy a shot. The kind of a well, it worked out the worst way possible. Arthur Smith got fired, but actually, that's still a thing I think they could regret. But I think just in this circumstances with the Saints, they're going to give them a long leash, Kellen Moore and Shock. So that's how I view it. It's like, let's just see. Because if you hit day two quarterback contract for a team that's always in cap hell, like, that's the way to go. You know, like, that's how you want to do. But again, that's like a long ways away. And also this draft class too. If we want to talk about that, so many guys are just being rumored to go back to school. There might not just be enough quarterbacks like in this draft class. Like, I might just be Mendoza and that's it. Like, so it's just, that's just another docking point that we'll have plenty to talk about in January and February and all that.
No question. And by all accounts, Kellen Moore really liked Tyler Shuck, and you know he might like him more than some of the guys that are going to be available in this class. And he did, by again, just based on what I've read, what I've heard, liked him better than the guy that went to this next team that we're going to talk about. People can disagree with that, but that was Jackson Dart and the New York Giants. That's the final team we'll talk about here. And by the way, it's not a coincidence that these are the dregs of the league and they're starting rookie quarterbacks. That's how the NFL works.
It's really hard.
It is really difficult. So two players from this team that were like that are in fantasy consideration are Theo Johnson and Wandale Robinson. I think Wandale has both of them have good
matchups.
I could
not believe you threw that name out there. I was stunned when I saw that name on the bullet point. Wandale Robinson, Matt Harmon typing that out on that shared Google sheet that we have, Google Doc.
Can I just say about Wandale, I have already capitulated and apologized for being so mean to him. Just because I do he's running real downfield routes this year. Okay,
he's
been totally fine.
Christian Kirkian, maybe I'll give him
it's
that.
Not a bad, yeah, that's not a bad comp. He's I think maybe fat. Yeah, juice those projections up as we're talking, Yahoo. No, but listen, he's much faster and more explosive this year than I think that he's been previously. And he's, again, actually running some real downfield routes. He's playing less in the slot this year than he has previously, which I think, again, has just allowed that, speed to really show for him. So, yeah, again, is he on that, Christian Kirk kind of Tyler Lockett spectrum of receivers? I don't know about that. But, I mean, I think he's maybe in that, ballpark of players. And he's in a contract year. He'll be a free agent. So that will be interesting to consider. And I do think he's in lineup considerations this week because they're playing the Commanders. And I mean, again, Theo Johnson, Wandale Robinson, they'll be able to get what they want. My big question to you is mostly going to be about Dart as a passer. So go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say Commanders, whoever plays the Commanders defense is just the autoest of auto smashes. That's one of those where it's just like play the opponent, not your player. Because it's the one of the worst defenses that I've ever seen, what the Commanders are doing right now and putting on film. It's like just so sloppy and so bad. Also, Wendell Robinson has drawn 4 pass interferences this year. How about that? A little short arm Wendell Robinson. But the Giants offense just overall, really, I'm not trying to be mean here, but really just if Dart's been out there or when Jameis Winston's been out there, so basically anyone but Russell Wilson, and I think really it ties in with Andrew Thomas coming back at left tackle a little bit, is it's been a productive offense. Like it's actually been like an offense that's been kind of more in the top half of the league and kind of underlying metrics. Dart, the name I brought up was Theo Johnson because Dart, remember I just mentioned kind of rookie quarterbacks and who they favor. that's where Theo Johnson's getting a lot of shot plays for Dart because they try to make, they've tried to carry over a lot what he ran at Ole Miss in this offense. And then sprinkle in a couple shot plays that he can kind of get to every week. And those have been generally going to Theo Johnson, even though, when Winston was out there, it was the double pass to Wendell Robinson. But it's just that, to me, it's just this kind of what they're doing right now is, all right, Dart is the athlete. Dart's the runner. That's the steady hand in this offense. Tyrone Tracy, when you're out there, we're rolling with you too. But I think more the passing game is a little inconsistent because Dart's a little more inconsistent. He's more of a runner right now than a thrower. And when he does throw, it's checkdowns and then just launch balls. Theo Johnson's kind of been more the beneficiary, but Wendell Robinson has too a little bit. Kind of just also it's one of those. Remember, we talked about Adee Mitchell a couple weeks ago with the Jets. Who else they got? You know, it's kind of like this is all they got. That's like a live body running these routes right now. No offense to Darius Slayton, the perpetually underrated Darius Slayton. But yes, these are kind of just the live bodies that this offense got right now.
Yeah, Darius Slayton might catch a long pass against that Commanders defense. Anything is possible. But yeah, I mean, with Dart they dialed back. The only thing I'm nervous about with the offense as a whole is that they did dial back the designed rush attempts. No designed rush attempts last time we saw Dart before the bye. I would expect that to continue. And the other thing is that their pass rate over expected is like bottom in the league since Mike Kafka took over. It just feels like they're trying to run the clock on the season. Like, let's just get out of here with Jackson Dart not getting hurt again.
Maybe no one will notice us.
Maybe no one will notice us. Maybe if you're Mike Kafka, you're thinking, if I just don't get Dart obliterated, he gets himself obliterated. That's another topic. But if I don't get him obliterated, maybe I can stick in the job here. I don't know. So that's the way they're handling it right now, which is a little weird and maybe could lead to like a, honestly, I feel like that Commanders game. We'll talk about the Commanders on the other side of the break here in just a second. We'll actually lead with them because it'll fit well together. But they're just trying to get out of the season, and that game might be over in 2 hours because of just that team's run heavy. This team's run heavy. So we'll see how that goes. But I do think Theo Johnson, if you're desperate at tight end, Wandale Robinson, definitely in consideration here because of that matchup. And I did note yesterday that Dart is much more efficient throwing against single high than he is with two high coverages, and which makes sense because that middle of the field, he's probably better throwing outside the numbers at this point than he is working over the trash of the middle, which shockingly Wandale has been running some of those routes outside the numbers, which is why I really do kind of like him this week.
Yeah. I again, it's just this matchup that they got. This is just as juicy as it gets. Like they can't cover a soul right now. And that's, again, another reason why I like Theo Johnson this week. It's because just they're going against the Commanders linebackers, going against shot plays as well, because I just think that they, when stuff, a lot of shot plays, there's a lot of action. So it's a lot of play action, a lot of stuff crossing defenders' faces. This is like the worst defense for that. I mean, JJ McCarthy just lit up this defense, and it's one of the worst. It was one of the worst performances by a defense this entire year by any team. And so that's why it's just like, that's Theo to me, Johnson. Long-term too, I just do like him because I do think he is one of those true wide tight ends that is a good receiver. And just if Dart is going to be the long-term option, they've already shown synergy that I'm like, all right, I think at least this guy could be a top three receiver in this offense, even with Neighbors coming back and whoever they have as number two, who knows with Robinson and everything. But I don't know, great matchup. Long-term, I like Johnson a lot. And then, like, I totally agree with you that Robinson has been kind of a nice, worthy of some praise, because there hasn't been a lot of plays where I'm like, oh, there he is again. Can't get open, getting sticky. It's actually been very productive, even if this offense kind of can be a little Looney Tunes at times with the love for the shot plays. I can't emphasize that enough. There's a lot of shot plays in this offense. And when I say shot plays, it's just very designery, heavy play action, a lot of stuff going on that they get to every week. It is. I mean, it's a good run game, though. Run game is legit. Offensive line's legit. They have some questions to answer this offseason, but the offensive line actually is one of the most underrated offensive lines in the league right now. We'll see long term.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're talking through more potential diamonds in the rough. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and this is our next section of potential diamonds in the rough on some bad offenses. These are teams that are not going anywhere, but they're not that bad. Well, maybe. But some of these teams aren't as bad as Browns, Saints, Giants, as we talked about in the previous section. Then again, the Commanders, as the first team that we're going to talk about here, the Commanders are not good. They're 3-10. They actually have a worse record. They have the same record as both the Browns and the Saints. So maybe they are that bad, actually. The Commanders haven't won a game since October, I believe. I think they've lost 8 straight games. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure they've lost 8 straight games.
I knew
games.
They were regressed, but god damn.
Yeah, man. We were all kind of in the same page of like, this is the regression team when we did our like Vegas shows this year, and it's been so much worse than I possibly could have imagined. And some of that is because Jaden Daniels has gotten hurt. He's not going to play in this game on Sunday, as Dan Quinn announced. Actually, before we talk about this team, just real quick, do you think Dan Campbell, not Dan Campbell, no, geez, Dan Quinn, do you think Dan Quinn is in any danger of losing his job here? I mean, you lose 8 straight games, you flop this hard, and the defense is as bad. I generally am kind of balking at like, hey, we should judge head coaches by the whole body of work, not just like, well, the Texans defense is good, so D'Amico Ryans is good. And I actually think D'Amico Ryans is a good coach. I'm just using it as a general. Like, you're a head coach. You're responsible for both sides of the ball. Please give me a break. But Dan Quinn is the defensive guy, and he took back control of the defensive play calling, and it's still horrific. Like, do you think that this organization is eyeballing the coaching staff at all this offseason or no?
I think it's one of those where they're going to give him run into this next year, but then it's like any sign of a downturn, it's like they're going to fire him. Because also just their front office, they have a lot of cooks in the kitchen. So I'm always curious of like how that kind of plays out. Like, you know, so there's power struggle stuff. Like, that's very, I know nothing. This is me as an outsider just looking at these types of situations. Usually they do things quicker than other teams like the Saints, where it's just, you know, it's just their owners, you know, it's just the Rooney, or not the Rooney's, the Loomises. No, but I think that he already played his first card, which is he got rid of the defense coordinator, which is also that usually puts your next into the chopping block. What that means for the entire team, I don't know. But, you know, a lot has to change. The personnel, this is why they were so interesting to me, was this offseason was they took so many flyers on vets, one-year deals, two-year deals, one-year deals, two-year deals, mostly on defense, but a little bit on offense too. Then they made some trades, but then I was curious who they would re-sign and who they would bring in. And they re-signed, you know, like Bobby Wagner and just a lot of other guys. And I was like, oh, okay, you guys don't think that's an issue. And to me, I was like, your defense needs so much, because I think they were just playing on borrowed time anyways. And I just looked, and I it was kind of one of those where I'm curious whose decision was that? Was them just going like, oh yeah, we trust the coaching staff? Was that the personnel going like, well, no, we trust you guys. We're not going to make our own eval. Like, I want to know. And I'm whoever gets in trouble and whoever the leaks start coming, I'll start knowing who's, you know, what's going to start happening in long term, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, a year from now. But I do think it just cranks up the seat because the hot seat because of that, because that he already fired the defensive coordinator. He's already taken over play calling, and it's just gotten worse. And it's supposed to be guys that know the system, quote unquote, and they very much look like they're not knowing the system. So he gets a little bit of leash because of Jane Daniels' injury, but also the problem of this team, the offense is top 10. It's top 10 with Marcus Mariota in it. Cliff Kingsbury, I do think, has earned a little bit more of my respect as a play caller the last 2 years. I think Bobby Johnson's a good offensive line coach. So to me, it's the defense. The head coach is in charge of the defense. Okay, that's where the questions are going to start.
Yeah, that makes like complete sense to me. And I mean, for this week, that bad defense going against another bad defense in the New York Giants, I think that's what's interesting about this matchup from like a fantasy standpoint. If you're looking for sleepers, this could be that beautifully bad shootout game here where it's two bad defenses, especially the Commanders. And I think Dart will be able to get it going there. So on the other side of it, Terry McLaurin, I think, is a guy who, you know, maybe a little bit disappointing last week, the results, but he did play much more than he did in the week prior. This is the type of defense, a secondary that he really gets over on. He's dunked on the Giants consistently throughout his career, and a lot of that is because they're more of that, like, single coverage type team on the outside where you're going to push more funnel. You're going to funnel more targets to the X receiver anyways. He's always better versus single high coverage and two high coverage. I think Terry McLaurin's definitely going to be in consideration here, but he's not the only player you want to highlight here, Nate. Tell me about Chris Rodriguez, Marcus Mariota. What are you looking at here for this team?
I feel like this is like the third or fourth week I brought up Chris Rodriguez because it's real. I think the game script didn't work for him, you know, recently in the last week because absolutely skunked. But Rodriguez and what this run system does from the Cardinals, we talk about this all the time. Cardinals or Commanders, Cliff Kingsbury's run game is kind of vastly underrated, success rate-wise, process-wise, and results-wise. And I think Rodriguez is just going to have some matchups that are just going to work for him. The Giants run defense, they're terrible tacklers, especially on the back end. And that matters when you have a hammerhead at running back because they don't want to tackle him. So boom, they'll just fall off. You know, and you have come corners that don't really want to tackle. So I think that's more of that's a better matchup. You just mentioned there might be some of that beautiful, ugly, you know, beautiful disaster shootout going on that I think works for this because boom, this guy's getting 8-10 yard runs as opposed to just ugly 2-3 yard runs. Eagles run defense, also a defense that I think they match up well against. They could spread them out, and with Vic Fangio's defense, and a hammerhead is better against that defense than a guy that requires more speed and bouncing because of just how good of a tackling team the Eagles can be on the back end. But they can, You want to run ugly against the Eagles. Maybe that's the best way to put it. And I think Rodriguez, again, it's a good matchup. And then the Cowboys defense, which has been better. The run defense has been better, but it's not overwhelmingly amazing. And again, a bad tackling team on the back end. So I just think he's like a all the way starter if you have him on the roster. Unless you just have like the dudes, I think, at the running back, because they want to run him. And I looked, he has 81 designed rushes, I think, this year. There's 52 running backs with 80 or more rushes in the NFL this season. He ranks 11th in rushing success rate. He's just behind Jonathan Taylor. He's just ahead of Zach Charbonnet, who's another beautiful disaster runner, beautiful ugly runner. Tyler Allgeier, another beautiful ugly runner. And then Devon Achane, he's just above. He's 7th in first downs per rush. And I think there's just going to be opportunities there and game scripts that actually might be better for this than maybe some of the other matchups they had, like the Vikings defense.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean, if they're going to get into goal line position, it's going to be Chris Rodriguez, who has 55% of the running back rushes since week 12. So it's not like a total domination by him. It's still like a split backfield, but he's clearly the main base guy. And he's the one that they're going to give the touches to down inside the goal line in the run game. So if this game gets high scoring, which I think it could between them, and even that game in week 17 against the Cowboys, that'll definitely be a high scoring game because Dallas is going to put it on their defense. And I think the Commanders can come back a little bit. You're looking for good odds at a touchdown there. That's kind of just what you need to bet on if you're betting on a Chris Rodriguez type back. So very interested in that game for sure. Let's go to the next team here, which is the Bengals offense, which I think there's a lot of players we don't need to discuss on the Bengals offense in this section. We don't need to talk about Joe Burrow. We don't need to talk about Ja'Marr Chase. Unfortunately, we don't need to talk about T. Higgins because he's not going to play, nor do we need to talk about the run game because Chase Brown is a fantasy starter and Samaje Perine is doing his thing. But there is one guy in the passing game that you want to discuss here, Nate. Who is that man?
It's the guy, like the world's worst tight end, because he's not good at any tight end things, but he's a dang good receiver. And that's Mike Gesicki. You know, he can catch the football and Joe Burrow likes him. And I think he's just a guy. If you're desperate, like this is a guy I would be okay starting, and maybe because I am desperate in a couple of dynasty leagues, because I have Tucker Kraft on those teams.
Nate, I was literally just going to say, I had to pick up Mike Gesicki in my dynasty league where I have Tucker Kraft because I was, it was a horrible situation because so it was one of those where it's actually my, it's my league with my subscribers, the sicko subscribers at Reception Perception. And these vultures must have smelt blood in the water because I've been crying about this Tucker Kraft injury on air. So they start sending me like the worst trade offers for tight ends. I'm like,
it's the worst.
You bozos think I'm giving you a rookie pick for Dalton Schultz.
Yeah.
I'm going to send you a refund on your subscription right now. You've just insulted me so much. So like I I go to the waiver wire because there's never anyone useful. This league it's very deep, big roster. Whatever, there's never anybody on there, but I went a couple weeks ago. I'm like, oh, Mike Gesicki's out here. I'm putting like a $5 bid on Mike Gesicki and trying to get him on my roster. And I am so thrilled that I did. So continue. I had to say we're in the exact same position there, that it's my Tucker Kraft team that I'm like, oh my God, I have Terrence Ferguson. I got him in the rookie draft. He ain't playing. I don't want to play Chig Okonkwo. Tyler Higbee's on IR. Can't even play him. He was on their roster. So I go to the waiver wire and there's Mike Gesicki.
It's funny you say Ferguson because in my league, Danny Heifetz from The Ringer, Tucker Kraft gets hurt. And I swear I was like within 10 minutes of him getting hurt or announced that he's on IR. He sends me, he goes, I know you like Ferguson. I was like, oh yeah, okay. He's like, so, and he sends me a trade offer. He wanted me to get rid of Kraft for Ferguson. And I think, and there's some picks and stuff like that. I was like, no, you don't understand. Like through my dead hands, are never letting go of Tucker Kraft. Like this is an untradeable asset. Like
you could tear that ACL three times. I'm never going anywhere.
This is as diamond hands as it gets. This is my baby. No, but sorry that you brought up Ferguson. But yes, anyways, Gesicki. Burrow likes him better than Flacco did. Just how Burrow plays, they're way more spread out. It's just the offensive system they played. Although they did some more under center last week. But I just think of just how they play, where they're going to chuck it with Burrow. Burrow wants his numbers. Burrow is going to get his numbers. And now with Higgins injured, he's kind of the number two. Definitely don't have to worry about Jermaine Burton. So, but I think Gesicki, actually, their other tight ends are actually not bad too. Like Tanner Hudson, of course, had the catch the other day, but he's like a pretty good auxiliary player, not fantasy wise, but just like in real football terms. Their rosters and their O line's actually pretty good now too. This has been like a top 8-ish run offense, really this year. But anyways, with Gesicki, it's just that I think Burrow likes some of the opportunities there. And I just think he's going to have more, he's going to outplay his projections because I understand what he has done most of this year. But I think the circumstances now leads to, I'm not even just talking myself into this. I just really mean this. But if you are desperate, I think he is more of a valid tight end to start than I would think the projections have and maybe some of his rankings have.
Oh, 100%. So the last 2 weeks, Mike Gesicki's run around on 43% of the dropbacks, which is third on the team because obviously T. Higgins has been hurt. He's been targeted on 27% of his routes, 2.8 yards per route. He's taken 20% of his snaps out wide, 73% from the slot. So he is truly just a slot receiver for this team. He has 10 targets, 8 catches, 105 yards. I mean, and one touchdown. It just, he is a wide receiver for this team. It's so funny. For all the talk over the years of people be like, Harmon, chart Kyle Pitts, chart the, you know, Harold Fannin, chart Brock Bowers. Nobody's ever asked for the Mike Gesicki reception perception chart. He probably has the best case of it. He probably has the best case of any tight end to actually be treated like a wide receiver. Ever.
I know.
Nobody's asked for it. Still not asking for it, but you know what? Yeah, I think you're going to get some fantasy points if you're asking for that from Mike Gesicki, because, yeah, these other receivers on the roster, like Mitchell Tinsley, they've been trying to get him involved. That hadn't really happened.
Right.
Andre Yoshivas is just kind of like a snap eater for this team.
Yeah, he's a role player.
Gesicki is the second most trusted target here. So, I mean, the Ravens defense, we'll see. Obviously, he did have some success against the Ravens in the first game, but not as much as he did last week against the Bills. But, like, Dolphins, Cardinals, big-time matchups here. I definitely think he is a – if you are screwed at tight end, and how many of us are not screwed at tight end, he's going to break whatever his ranking is on a weekly basis. I think he will do better than that. I'm definitely going to have him very much in, like, the tight end – two-ish radar. You know, once you get down to like that Hunter Henry, Theo Johnson zone, like, why not Mike Gesicki? Why not?
My area. That's my zone.
Yeah. Exactly.
I honestly should never even draft a tight end high or pay for a tight end high ever again, how I play redraft leagues, right? It's just like, I just shuffle these guys because it's my weird niche I have with fantasy is finding like just the spike week tight ends for that. But the Dolphins, though, speaking of spike weeks, the Dolphins defense also – nice little segue. But the Dolphins defense is actually just really good or really bad against inline tight ends. And because of just, I know inline is not Gesicki, they have used them that way. Some designs, it's like one of the most obvious tendencies or tells that they have, that when he's in line, it's going to be a play action pass or a pass because he's never going to block. He is true. This is a kind of a anecdotal story about scouting. When I was with the Falcons, he was the lowest graded blocking grade I think I've ever seen. Like, I think he was the first three that I saw. It's a 2-8 scale, and 2 usually means need more information. So he was a 3. I've never seen that because he's a volleyball player. It's not like, he was like this. Like, it's some of those skill sets don't really work, which you need him to do. But, man, he can go up and high point that football, though. You know, and Burrow loves that. Burrow's going to give some chances out of the break. So, yeah, he's just such a unique player. It's one of these players I just kind of crack up every time I have to talk about him.
Last team I want to hit on here is actually those Dolphins offense real quick. And I don't really actually have too much to add here because, like, Devon Achane is having a great season, probably a first round pick next year in fantasy. I think he's going to go crazy on the Steelers defense. I think Jaylen Waddle will as well. Jaylen Waddle has been targeted on 28% of his routes the last 2 weeks, 13 targets. Nobody else on the team has more than 9, which is Malik Washington. And those are like low, short A-dot targets. So it's pretty much the dropback game is all Jaylen Waddle. However, I think Darren Waller is an interesting sleeper candidate at tight end if you're desperate. Greg Dulcich has actually still been playing a lot. He's fourth on the team out among tight ends and wide receivers in terms of routes run the last 2 weeks. 23 routes for him. Darren Waller and Malik Washington trail Jaylen Waddle with 33 for both of them. So, yeah, I mean, that, I don't know, you're not playing Greg Dulcich in fantasy, but there's clearly using a lot of like the tight ends. And I think obviously Darren Waller, if you're in trouble, could potentially be interesting in this matchup.
Yeah, and the Dolphins' offense has just actually been way better, and this team is just playing better football right now. Just overall, you
can see the record as the Chiefs, by the way.
Yep, unbelievable, unbelievable. Nowhere near the same, but yes. And Mike McDaniel can call a dang football play, and he can drop a good football play. You know, it's a watching him though in fantasy terms is tough because it's like, okay, Waddle obviously is the one, but I thought Achane hurt his rib. And I'm curious if that he might be, I think he's questionable for this next week. So like the other backs though are kind of flawed, and I can't get over the top where I like really want to rave and rant about them. But the thing is they could just hit because they just are so, like Jalen Wright, what he has made, like why you drafted him out of Tennessee was he was a home run hitter. Like it was like clear the path and you can go, who knows against some of these defenses, like where it's just like they give a lot of opportunities. Like this offense does. I mean, just the offensive system. Really, their team is more interesting for me is some of their auxiliary players. I'm just like, for dynasty reasons, just like long-term dart throws. Julian Hill, the other tight end, is like just a guy I've always just, it's caught my eye, always. Just one of these, he was undrafted, more of a blocker. They use him as a blocker, but just a guy I'm keeping tabs on. Just long-term something, like something, some guy that might become something like year three, year four, year five. And then Malik Washington is, They try to give him touches. He's very, very fast. Also another guy that maybe a back end of a deep roster that I just want to keep on my just as a stash. Just who knows what the offense turns out to be down the road if they keep McDaniel, because I don't know. He's interesting. And then he's had some good, you know, shot or like juice plays where it's like he's caught my eyes. He's very fast. It's really hard not to like have him grab your attention when a guy is really, really fast. But also I wanted to talk about the run game was just if you looked at the long term. Okay, Bengals would look like the best run defense that they play the last 3 weeks or the next 3 weeks. They're 29th in rushing success rate. But since week 10, they're eighth. Like they've actually been playing a little bit better, maybe just kind of just having Burrow back, whatever it is. The Bucs are second if you look at the long-term rushing success rate allowed. Since week 10, they're 11th. And then the Patriots are ninth if you looked at the whole season, but they've had injuries. They've had Milton Williams get hurt amongst others. They're 26th since week 10. So it's just a little better slate than you would think. And I think this offense is really churning. And I think their young O-line is really hitting. Patrick Paul, their left tackle. This is, if you can't tell, guys, I've been waiting to talk about the Dolphins for a couple of weeks. But Patrick Paul, though, their left tackle, like he's legit. Like, I don't want to say, like, oh, he's going to be an all-pro one day. But he's really good. And that's, so I'm just, they're a team I'm just so interested in. They have so many interesting ways they can go about this offseason. But the stuff's been good. It's been a good team the last couple of weeks.
The right side of their line, I think, still is in trouble. But I think Aaron Brewer's had a really awesome season.
Yes.
I think Jonas Sabanaya, he was a disaster at the start of the season. Not to be mean, but was a disaster at the start of the season. I think he started to look a little bit better. You know, he's a rookie guard, and they were counting a lot on him. So definitely that left side of the line is big. And I just think this Dolphins team, it's trending in the right direction where I think they probably should keep McDaniel and just see what happens next year. I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback, but there are some interesting pieces on this offense that we just talked about. So that is good to see for a team that I was pretty done with at the start of the season. All right, we're going to take our next quick break. When we come back, Thursday night preview. We've got two big questions about each team. We're going to get into those right after this. All right, we're back, and it's time to preview Thursday night football. We've got one team that really matters in this matchup and one team that does not. We got Falcons at Bucks here. The Bucks are 4.5-point home favorites, a 44.5-point over-under. I wanted to frame this discussion, Nate, in a way where we're kind of looking at these two teams. I got one big question about each of them, and the one on the Bucks, number one, matters more, and number two, it's much more wide-ranging, and it's also much more pressing, whereas the second one is more of a strictly fantasy talking point. So with the Bucks, the good news is we might get Mike Evans and Jalen McMillan back in this game, specifically Mike Evans. But I kind of wanted to ask, like, what is going on with Baker Mayfield? You know, we talk a lot about Emeka Egbuka and some of the struggles that he's had on this show, although we know that he is still a good football player. But I thought this stat from John Ledyard was interesting here. Baker Mayfield ranks 22nd out of 24 qualifying quarterbacks on adjusted completion percentage on throws of 10 to 19 yards in the air, according to PFF. PFF. He is 18th of 26 on throws of 20 plus air yards. As John notes, adjusted completion percentage is completions plus drops, and it doesn't count throwaways, tip balls, all that type of stuff. So 22nd out of 24 in that intermediate area of the field, pretty important in this offense in particular. What's going on with Baker Mayfield in this Bucs offense right now?
I think there is, the anecdote might be coming. The antidote, I should say, and Mike Evans, because I have some Mike Evans and Baker Mayfield splits that are very interesting. And when you watch this offense, I do think that they're overall, there's been a drop off because offensive line injuries mostly, and Chris Godwin looking like 60% of Chris Godwin. I know once he's come back, but the screen game has come down and the run game has come down, which has just let, you know, it's less efficient overall as an offense. But since 2023, the Bucs with Baker Mayfield and Mike Evans on the field at the same time. This is from True Media. Over 1,000 dropbacks, 1,060. Baker, or just the Bucs offense I looked at, but it's Baker because he's on the field. They're fifth in EPA per dropback, tied for seventh in net yards per attempt, fifth in explosive passes, explosive pass rate, fifth in dropback success rate. Baker, when he's on the field without Mike Evans since 2023, 701 dropbacks. So we're getting close to kind of the same split here, or an even split. 17th. In EPA per dropback, 20th in net yards per attempt, 17th in explosive pass rate, 21st in dropback success rate. So they go from a top five passing offense to a bottom, I would say below average, average to below average passing offense. And it makes sense when you think of what Baker likes to throw, stuff to the outside. You know, he likes his outbreakers. Mike Evans, anecdotally, because I know you got the numbers, I felt like he's always been good on those plays. And I just think that they, and Mike Evans is just such a safety net. I know I use safety nets as the tight ends underneath, but Baker's play style and Mike Evans' play style works together because, well, Mike Evans would work for any quarterback, but for Baker's play style, where he likes to chuck it up, let his guys take chances, especially to the outside, not having Mike Evans there is a big miss. And it's when he's not on the field. So yes, there's other parts of the offense, but there is a Mike Evans size hole in this offense going on right now.
And yeah, this team that they're facing here on Thursday, the Falcons, like their pass defense has really started to fall apart. It was kind of always a high wire act where it was a lot of blitzes and a lot of pressure. And if you can block them up, and I obviously Tristan Wirfs' health will be important to note in this one. Is he going to play after he did not play last week? That's going to be important. But I actually think their offensive line, even though they've shuffled it, once they got Graham Barton back at center, I generally think the line has been fine, even as they've dealt with some other injuries. It hasn't been a complete disaster. They should be able to block this up. And you know, we saw JSN, like, because they bring so many guys down into the box and it's typically a one high look, that you can just fry them with your number one receiver on the outside. So with Ibuka and Mike Evans, if those guys are working in tandem, I think that just makes the offense feel much better, as I've kind of talked about for weeks. I'm honestly, I had somebody tweet me today, and shout out to them. I was trying to find the handle here because I want to give them credit. They were like, you guys got to stop talking about Emeka. David tweeted this to me today. You guys got to stop talking about Emeka Ibuka. I feel like he comes up on every episode. I was like, well, we're about to have a Thursday Night Football preview and he plays in that game, so I apologize that we're not going to follow your rule. But I was like, and I said to him, I was like, honestly, continues. I agree with you. I'm tired of saying the same thing about it every single week and the same old analysis. Trust me, I'm tired of talking about it if you're tired of hearing about it. But I do think that Evans coming back is a new variable that we can introduce to this offense. And then maybe let's talk about it after the game, like what felt different, what looked different, because he's a future Hall of Famer. Like, he's that level of player. He should come back here and make this unit straight up feel better. So I'm very much hoping to see that in this game, that's for sure. Your stats on that, I think, back up kind of the eye test and the way it feels when Mike is and is not part of the proceedings.
And I think even because he did miss some time last year, correct? He always misses like a game or two.
Yeah,
like,
he always misses time. Yeah.
Yeah, it was that why last year they kept churning was because the run game was so much better last year. And it just these things happen.
The screens and Cohen. They had an elite play caller last year. They don't have one this year.
That too. Correct. And so like that just that's why it just feels not the same even when he was gone. You know, it's like, well, last year he missed time and everything. That the other parts that the easy buttons of this offense are not as easy. Not outright bad. The run game hasn't been great. Bucky Irving's last in rushing success rate. I keep getting shocked every time I see that number. But it's just one of these things where it's just how it all is with the offense. It's a lot harder this year. And Evans is one of those easy buttons that hasn't been there. It hasn't been available. Like even I did notice too, is that The true sack rate, which is sacks divided by dropbacks as opposed to pass attempts, it stayed about the same with or without Mike Evans. So it's just, I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny. It wasn't like Baker's running around panicking anymore. It's just that the easy button that he's had is just not as good. It's not as easy anymore. So that's why the rest of the stuff just kind of falls to average-ish as opposed to just bad.
I think this offense can find some success on Thursday with Mike Evans back. I guess specifically against this matchup. And my advice to you from like a start-sit perspective with Ibuka is if you bench him, he's going to go off. So get ready for that. It is what it is. It'll happen at some point. Is it going to be this week? I don't know. That's just where I'm at with it. So last question about this game here on the other side of it. The Falcons are at a point where Drake London's not back. The passing offense stinks. We know what Bijan is. We don't need to talk about that. I just wanted to ask you, is Kyle Pitts finally happening, Nate? Because over the last 3 weeks, and obviously this has been without Drake London, and Drake London's not going to play in this game, he has a 29.1% target share of the Falcons offense that is number one amongst tight ends. He's caught 15 of 23 targets for 197 yards, which is tied for Harold Fannin for second among tight ends in that stretch of games. No touchdowns, but nevertheless, he's been very productive over the last, like, do you see anything different with Pitts, or have you not been watching the Falcons, which is a very acceptable answer? Or is this just kind of a fluke because London is out?
No, I do think this is finally happening a little bit because London's out. And I think it's more just like, well, we have to throw it somewhere else. but I think with Pitts is that you can see him where on the routes that he's best at is when he can just get his long legs going. So stuff outside, benders, long stuff, vertical stuff. But it's just that, I mean, he had a major knee injury that just didn't maybe get looked like at as a major knee injury that kind of has been dragging him, like pun intended, you know, of just how he's just been playing. And I think now he actually is back to, I wouldn't say 100% rookie self. I think the injury is going to have long-term effects, but I do think he's maybe a half step below that, but it's much better than it's been the last couple of years. So he is getting some more of that explosive element. He's just so young. And I think he's just developed into his body as well. I think he's become a better blocker as well, which has kind of been one of the low key things. He's not dominant. He's not Kittle or anything like that. But I do think he's become actually more solid in that area. So he's become more well-rounded and he's getting more of the juice back. I still like him long-term because he's just so dang young that it's just one of these things where it's like, yeah, he can still develop something. He's not going to be that 100% self, but I do think that finally happening, yes, to a sense. Yes.
Yeah, and his snaps out wide are down since London has gone out. I think that obviously matters. I never like using the tight end as the out wide receiver. You're just congratulations. Then you have the 25th best X receiver in the league. Not that exciting for me. I'm going to have Kyle Pitts ranked as a top 7-8-ish tight end this week. So definitely a fantasy starter here in this particular matchup. Nate, good one here. This is a good show.
It was fun.
Appreciate you, buddy. We're going to say goodbye to you here, but we covered a ton of topics. Hopefully you feel like you got off your chest what you needed to about some of these slot fest teams.
It's cathartic. It was cathartic. Yeah, no, thank you for letting me shed some weight on this show. I actually really enjoyed that. I appreciate it.
And if you like hearing Nate talk about bad teams, you're going to love hearing him talk about the good teams on Football 301. You can make sure you subscribe to that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm on the show, but also him and Charles have the preview show coming out tomorrow. So definitely they'll be talking about some teams that aren't the Browns and the Titans. Well, we didn't even talk about the Titans here. That's too low. That's too low for our standards here.
I just wrote an article about it.
My God.
3,000 words on the Titans offense and Cam Ward. that's real sick.
People, go make sure you click that. The Titans probably aren't clicking the most on the Yahoo website, so go make sure you click on that one so Nate can feed his family. Please, let's do that. All right, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, Joel Smith joins the show for this week's edition of Buzz is Building. We're going to get into that right after this. Welcome to Buzz is Building with Joel Smith. Every Wednesday, Joel joins us for the last block of the show here to provide five players with some buzz that you need to keep an eye on in each individual week slate heading into it. This week, for week 15, our focus is right at what matters here, Joel. It's the playoffs. Fantasy matchups to exploit this week. What's going on, buddy?
Yep, we got five of them today. It is fantasy playoffs. They're here. Round one, so I'm excited.
How many playoff matchups you got cooking this week? Like, what's burning on your brain right now?
I don't play in many leagues. I like keeping it short. So I think I have 5 this year and in 4 of them. One is a dynasty league that we're rebuilding right now. So taking our time.
Hey, that's totally good. Yeah, I've got about the same. Honestly, I try to not play in like a bajillion leagues anymore too. I remember like the first year I was in this industry full time, I did like 25 leagues and yeah, it was a horrific experience. No, we'll never do it again. And even sometimes when my friends ask me like, how many leagues you play in? I'm like, like 7 or so. And they're like, that's disgusting. Way too many. I'm like, hey, it's lower than it was before. We're trending in the right direction, folks. And so are these players here that we're going to talk about. They're trending in the right direction as we got some matchups to exploit this week. Let's start with your first player, Travis Etienne, Jacksonville Jaguars running back.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Etienne right now. With the second half of the season, his volume has been going up and up and up. It's number 6 in the second half among running backs, so that's great. But the big thing here is just this Jets team. They are not good. They don't have a quarterback right now. The Jaguars are projected to win by a bunch. There's just so much set up for Etienne. Specifically, though, since that Quinnen Williams trade along with that Sauce Gardner trade, that defense, they've been 32nd in rushing points per game allowed, partially because of that game script. But a lot of it, just they've not a good running defense without Williams, especially. So Etienne, a guy that in his wins, he has been dominant on the ground when the Jaguars are winning, and we would expect them to against the Jets.
Travis Etienne's just been really good this year, and I think we talked about it earlier this week. I talked about it in 301 actually with Nate earlier this week, that just not getting enough credit because it felt like everybody else wanted someone else, anyone else, to be the lead back for the Jaguars. It's going to be Tank Bigsby. Is it going to be Bashiel Tutin? Well, it's not been any of those guys. It's been Travis Etienne. He's been very effective this year. He's been particularly effective, Joel, on runs that break to the outside. Like outside zone runs have been a specialty for this Jags team. Liam Cohen's leaned into that with the style of offensive lineman that they have. That's been a great fit for Etienne. And I can just see it. I mean, Jalen freaking Wright had 100 yards on this Jets team last week. A lot of, again, banging things to the outside. You're going to tell me Travis Etienne can't have that level of success? I definitely think so. I actually have him on 2 of my playoff rosters, so I'm hoping to manifest some of this into existence here. I will say I opened up like the consensus rankings tab this week, and I just thought Etienne was way too low. I think he's like a top 10 running back this week.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past them. In terms of the games they've won, 12 rushing points per game. When they lose, it's at 6.5, so like half of that amount. I would expect them to win this game. I wish he got a little bit more receiving, especially with this Liam Cohen offense in general. But on the ground right now, you can't really ask for anything better. He's been awesome.
It's a good point. That's probably what explains the receiving or the losing versus winning splits there. It would be nice if he was getting those receptions, but maybe it's something they're going to show here as they get closer to the playoffs, more of that screen package that we've not seen with this team as we did with Liam Cohen's Tampa Bay Buccaneers team. Let's stay at the running back position and go to the next player here, James Cook, Buffalo Bills running back.
Yes, and we are talking about matchups to exploit this week. So I do want to say, I do know that the New England Patriots are number 1 against running backs this week or this year. So I get that it is a tough matchup for James Cook, but I think this is one of those spots where it is a start your studs type of game. There's lots of different things to go into this matchup when we break down the context. So number 1 is just there's 2 different things of why the Patriots have been so good this year as a rushing defense. 1 is they're good. But 2 is just the game script. We know their schedule, like it's a laughable schedule. Everyone's making fun of it. They're winning, but it's against a lot of bad teams that they are destroying, and they're not really getting run on too much. So when we break down this actual defense in some of those closer games, if we just look at the yards per carry, the first half, they were the 2nd best in the NFL. Amazing. The second half of the year, though, they've actually been 16th. So it's been more middle of the road. And a big part of that is these last 3 games, they've been without another defensive tackle named Williams, Milton Williams, in that interior right there. They've been 27th in yards per carry allowed these last 3 games, and it was against the Jets, Bengals, and Giants. So it's not like these dominant running attacks that are beating them. So I think in this game, rematch of what they played earlier, Cook didn't play well against the Patriots last time, but I think if we're expecting a close game, the Patriots haven't had too many. This run defense is a little bit worse. I don't think it is the worst matchup possible for Cook. I think it is more you start your guy that's been your RB1 this season.
Yeah, tough to get away from him almost no matter what the matchup is, because just like what are your alternatives going to be? But I do agree with you that this Patriots team is still very good, and I generally think the defense does certain things well, but the run defense slipping because of it without Milton Williams is obviously makes sense. Like he was paid a ton of money for a reason, not just as an interior disruptor, but to bring some stability to that interior of the defensive line. And I also think too, the Bills wide receiver room is just, it is what it is. Like they're not going to get a lot of targets funnel into those guys. I mean, freaking Gabe Davis leading your team in routes in the year 2025. That's a tough look, but that's just going to funnel more targets, I think, not just to the tight ends, Dalton Kincaid, who I really like going forward, but James Cook as well, targeted on like, I think 20% of his routes in this game against the Bengals. I could see him having a high usage receiving game here as well.
Yeah. He really just needs one play. He has gotten a little bit more receiving this past like month or so. So I do like that.
Okay, next player here, quarterback position, Matthew Stafford, one of the MVP contenders of this season. What do we like about Stafford this week?
Yeah, a lot. It's a revenge game right here. We're in December, and one of the things I look at in December, especially for quarterbacks, is where are they playing? He is at home in Los Angeles in the dome. He doesn't have to be like in Chicago this weekend where it's negative 20 degrees outside. He gets his nice easy dome matchup against his old team. They are 27th in passing fantasy points per game allowed this year, and they're 31st against receivers, which the Rams target receivers more than anybody. So there's a lot to like here in this passing matchup. That and the game script helps them too.
Also, I don't know if you've looked into this, but I mean, Stafford's been good against everything this year. Like there's no coverage that foils him. There's no coverage that foils these wide receivers, but particularly against man coverage, he's just absolutely shredded. I don't think he's thrown an interception against man coverage this year, which again, he's barely thrown picks. That's been one of the stories of his season, but he's been remarkably efficient against man coverage this season. Puka Nacua has been as well. Devontae Adams, you think about those ISO routes where he's getting into the end zone. And obviously the Lions play a ton of man coverage, regardless of their situation. At cornerback, regardless of who's at cornerback and regardless of who they're going against, like they manned up on those Cowboys receivers last week, and obviously CeeDee Lamb didn't play the whole game, but he had like 100 yards right away, and then Ryan Flournoy picked up right off of him. So I feel like this Rams team going against that defense, the high scoring potential is big on both sides. Certainly I think this is like the biggest total game of the season, but Stafford and this Rams passing game, huge advantage towards them over that defense, I would say.
Yeah, there's so much positive because that you bring up like the highest game total. The Lions offense helps Stafford right here just because this Rams defense has been so good. We've had a lot of games like last week, you know, where they put up a lot of points, but in the second half, they're not throwing as much. This could be a game where they put up a ton of points and then they keep having to put up a lot of points against a secondary. Again, like you mentioned, they're without Arnold. Brian Branch is towards Achilles, sadly. They maybe get Kirby Joseph back. But still, like, it's a banged up secondary on top of it.
Yeah, I got Stafford as my QB3 this week. I expect a ton of points in that game. And yeah, there's one team where I've just been having Matthew Stafford as my QB1 for a long, long time, and I did not expect that to be the case. Definitely was not expecting him to be that. I thought he would have a good season if he was healthy. We all thought that, but I mean, the season that he's having here from a fantasy standpoint, despite the fact I think he has negative rushing yards on the year, is very impressive. Obviously, doing that is very impressive for any quarterback. Let's get back to the running back position here with Woody Marks, Texans running back.
Yeah, I like to go deep in a lot of these matchups sometimes and really try to find some weaknesses, different things to exploit, that sort of thing. When it comes to this one, it's really just the opposite. It's as simple as it can be. The Cardinals defense isn't good right now. And you have a guy, Woody Marks, where the offense might not be incredible, but lately especially, he's kind of been that bell cow running back there. Now Nick Chubb is injured. Who knows if he's going to play this weekend? But he led the league last week in the percent of his team carries. So he's getting a ton of work. And then we get a matchup like Arizona. Since week 9, they're dead last in scoring defense. They've allowed 40 points in 3 of their last 5 games. So Marks is definitely one of those players where you need a touchdown from him. In the games with a touchdown, he's averaging 17 points per game. When he doesn't score, he's averaging 5. So you're really hoping for the touchdown here, but it's something the Cardinals, they've allowed 10 touchdowns to running backs these last 5 games in that stretch. So their defense has been horrible. The team in general is kind of all not really put together the best right now. So with the Texans defense, the workload that he's getting, I like the potential for Marks here.
Yeah, all respect to Jacoby Brissett and what they've done offensively, but I just think that offense is going to get taken apart by the Texans defense. And look, if you can still start Michael Wilson if there's no Marvin Harrison Jr., that's fine. Like, Bam Knight is a whatever running back three, you know, kind of maybe a flex play type desperation volume guy. But I just think they're going to be in negative game scripts consistently, which on the flip side there means it's going to be positive game script for the Houston Texans, which should lead to a ton of Woody Marks. He's dealing with a little bit of an injury right now. I think he's probably still expected to play, but Jolie's probably dealing with an injury because he touched the ball a ton in that game the last week, where I was like, he's like scraping himself off the turf a couple of times. I'm like, my God, I don't think this was the vision of like what they thought Woody Marks was going to be when they kind of took him as a scat back type in the fourth round.
Yeah, I think he had 28 touches. He also gets hurt like every single game. So feel bad for him there. He's always playing the next week, but every single week he seems to get hurt. So hopefully he can stay healthy in this one too.
Yeah, definitely think good running back two type, and all of the rookie running backs are in interesting spots this week. Woody Marks certainly included there. Fifth and final player we will talk about, Stephon Diggs, Patriots wide receiver. And I'll put this to you this way, Joel. I'm very excited to hear what you have to say about Stephon Diggs, because I can never get the Diggs week right. The playing time's everywhere. The points are everywhere. I thought we'd be getting the last Bills game. He's playing his former team, the Bills, this week. I thought it was like wheels up from there. Diggs was going to be used every single week. That's not been the case. It's been very hit or miss, been very up or down. What is the outlook for Diggs this week? And I ask specifically because I've got a dynasty team that has Stephon Diggs and I need to know what to do, Joel.
Yeah, a lot of it is honestly just narrative. They plays the Bills, like you said, that revenge game, just like Stafford, another revenge game here. So the last time they played, 12 targets, 10 receptions, 146 yards. And another thing that you mentioned there, how much is he on the field? I looked it up. In the games where he's running 60% of routes, he's averaging nearly 15 points per game in PPR. It's just the ones where he's only out there for 50% of routes, 45% of routes instead of 70 or something. That's when his games aren't nearly as good. And some of that is the Patriots offense and their defense killing these teams. So hopefully, again, going back to that James Cook thing, is like, if it's a close or high scoring game, hopefully the Patriots are passing a little bit more, because when he's on the field, he's still their wide receiver one in terms of targets per route run. The Bills defense a little bit on the downtrend too, so I think that helps him.
Yeah, they're kind of mixing and matching personnel. That's a part of it with that Bills defense. They're kind of trying to figure it out over there, but they've got injuries on the defensive line, that's for sure. So the pass rush might not be too much of a threat for Drake May. And yeah, you mentioned it, like when he is on the field, he is still super effective. Stephon Diggs, he's 12th in the NFL in yards per route run right now. He's just ahead of like Jamar Chase. I mean, he's still been really good when he's been out there. It's just trying to figure out when he's going to be out there and when he's not. And I would say, if I can go down there narrative street on this one too, I do wonder, and again, I'll admit here, I never get this situation right when I'm trying to figure out when the Diggs games are coming or the usage or any of that stuff, Joel, but is this not when you'd want to ramp him up? You know, I mean, it's time to win the division, it's time to win these games, it's time to get playoff seeding, the whole deal. And this was the bye. Like, you got the bye, you got that 32-year-old body rested up now. This is the time when you'd think Diggs, 80% route participation, like these should be the games consistently down the stretch.
Yeah, I'll give you some more. Like, off the bye, yeah, revenge game, yes. He is one of the most incentive-based players in the NFL right now in terms of his contract. So these last four games, yeah, we got four games left. He can make a lot of money if he's on the field and doing well. I think he's going to want to be on the field a bunch, especially against his former team, get those targets in potentially a close game. So I like it for him. They're 22nd against the slot too. So he plays half in the slot, 50-50 exactly. So the Bills, below average actually against the slot this season, so that might help as well.
All four of the games out of the bye are AFC games. Obviously, this one against the Buffalo is their biggest, you know, in the division, the contender, whatever. But then the Ravens, the Jets, the Dolphins to end the season. So all teams that Miami should want to beat. Again, conference record's going to matter here when it comes to seeding, everything like that. So definitely think there's some incentive here to ramp him up. And I like you, speaking of incentives, like you pointing out that part. I mean, shoot, I know he just had a kid with Cardi B, but I mean, she's a singer. She's got cash, but like, got new kid. You know, Diggs likes to travel. I've seen the Instagram, the photos, the fashion, all that. Like, that stuff costs money. A few more extra catches here or there, Joel, that might do him some good.
Or the reverse. He's dating Cardi B now, so he doesn't need his incentive. So we got to bench him in fantasy football. Either one.
I think the motivation will still be there to, make it an equal partnership. Let's call it that. All right. That's going to do it for Buzz is Building. Joel, these were five really good ones. I hope that the people can get some success from you here for their matchups, and we can all continue to crush it. What are you working on this week that the people can check out as they head into their most important fantasy games?
Ooh, we have our Matchup Lies video out on YouTube and TikTok yesterday. So kind of breaking down, we've gone 14 weeks. A lot of the times, the one tiny number next to your player's matchup, it doesn't really, you shouldn't follow it. So breaking down the context, the injuries, the changes on defense, all that sort of stuff to show you how really good these matchups are. And we'll have stuff Thursday, Friday as well.
Yeah. Looking at that one little number next to your matchup, that's great. We love you being on the Yahoo app, of course, and shout out to everything that's going on the app, of course. But that's what the sheep are looking at. If you're watching Joel's videos on YouTube, TikTok, whatever, you're a wolf. Okay, you're listening to this show, you're watching the show, you're a wolf. Don't be a sheep, be a wolf. Make sure you check out Joel's videos so you know exactly what you need to know about all of these matchups. And that is going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL, who's all in all season. And don't forget to check out Toyota's game day giveaways for your chance to win. We will be back here tomorrow with Justin Boone to preview week 15. Everything you need to know for week 15. That's going to happen right here on YouTube, 5 p.m. Eastern. Until then, we are out.